Welcome back, TKO fans, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
How are we doing today?
Today, we're going to go over the Cater Allen fight card real quick, and then we're going to break down the upcoming card, Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Lemos. It's going to be an awesome card. Y'all stay tuned. Stick with us.
Welcome back, TKO Nation. Honestly, how you doing, man? I haven't talked to you since last week.
I'm doing all right. You know, I'm hanging in there. Not a great night at the office on that Cater Allen card, but we're going to get back to it with the Rodriguez card, I think.
Man, sometimes you got to take some lumps. That's all it is. I did pretty good, but, you know, I don't feel too good about it because, honestly, this was, for as excited as I was for the card, it was a bit of a disappointment. I went 4-2, you know. Probably should have gone 6-0 had things gone a little differently. But the way that I got two of those points, I'm not exactly satisfied with. And you mean you can call it what you may. I do push my record up to a respectable 18-12 on my picks.
Pretty good.
But yeah, you know, I kind of got my underdog pick too, but I'm not exactly happy with it. And it's one that I fully dispute. I don't think we'll get to it later on that one. But you know, I was pretty upset about that one.
Yeah, I mean, which one was that?
My underdog pick was Roundtree. I thought he would maybe get a knockout or something, but you know, it was a pretty good fight, and I thought that he had I don't think that he did enough to win. By any means, you know, I think Jacoby had just stayed really active, but we'll get to that when we get there. But I got the underdog pick, wasn't exactly right on it, but.
Yeah, I think I picked Dolice for my underdog pick, so I got the underdog pick as well. That fight was pretty interesting, but let's start with the main event. Pretty disappointing ending there. You know, it looked like it was shaping up to be a great fight. Allen had a hot start, as I expected, and Cater was starting to land a couple combinations, but then he unfortunately blew out his knee on that flying knee attempt. It really sucked, honestly, man. Because I was really excited to see how that fight was going to play out over 5 rounds. Both those guys have styles that would be really interesting to watch over 25 minutes. But it is what it is. And Arnold Allen picks up that second round TKO victory by way of injury. And that got you another dub on your slip and me another loss. But hey, man, you know, that's the game. That's how it happens.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just one of those things. It's the game, man. Like, I had saw the second that he landed, you know, the way that he landed, I had figured that he had hurt himself. I didn't think it was as bad as that. Who was it that hurt their leg early on in the night?
Phil Hawes against Roman Dolice.
I saw the second I saw that, you know, that going on, I knew that his knee was messed up even before he tried to stand on it.
Yeah.
With Cater's, you know, I thought maybe he was able to, you know, with the round, you know, the little break in between the round, you know, he was, you know, he might have found it. Maybe it's just a tweak or maybe he had to adjust to something. But, yeah. You know, it was pretty apparent early that, you know, this fight was going to end in disappointing fashion. You could tell that Allen wasn't really happy with it. And good showing on him. Yeah, and good showing on him, you know, to be like, hey, you know, I can't really come out here and, you know, say I want a belt after this, you know, not taking anything away from the fight, but it didn't go very long. I'm not a big fan of interim belts, but I do like his call to go for an interim belt and to try and get one, especially with Volk being busy with Islam, it seems, in the near future. So that might be I think that was probably a good shout out on his end. Cause even if he had gone out there saying, I want the title, he has to get in line anyway. You know, he has to wait on Volk. So, you know, maybe I don't know. You know, maybe they run it back. You know, maybe they decide to, you know, that this was a decent one. Maybe there's no other featherweights that really contend. But it was very disappointing. It was very disappointing. But I still would like to see. I think Allen. You know, I was impressed with what little we did see.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. I thought he looked great in that first round. Was laying some pretty hard punches on Cater. You know, we said in the lead up is hittable, and that might lead to some moments for Allen, but. I do like his call for the interim belt. I think him versus Josh Emmett makes a lot of sense for that fight. If not, Yair Rodriguez is right there as well. But I'd honestly like to see Yair taking a different fight right now, just because that win over Brian Ortega was, you know, again, another like fluke injury. I mean, he did go for the submission that led to that injury, but that's neither here nor there. Josh Emmett is coming off that victory over Calvin Kattar, which a lot of people thought he lost, but either way, he did very well in that fight. And I think that fight with him and Arnold Allen makes a lot of sense. I think it would be a really interesting matchup while Volkanovski figures out what's going on at 155, if he's going to stay up there, if he wins, obviously he'll probably stay up there. But, you know, if he doesn't, I'm sure he'll come back to the winner of that fight. So, yeah, pretty disappointing outcome in that one, but nonetheless, great showing from Allen. He did what he was supposed to do, you know. Going down the card, the co-main event was another solid scrap, pretty close fight. I mean, I thought Max Griffin definitely won it, but, you know, one of the judges that scored it for Means, and even in that, like, when they're calling the decision, you can see Means, like, shake his head no when they called, when they said that he had won, from one of the judges had picked him. So, like, even he knew that that was a bad choice, you know what I mean? Max Griffin looked pretty sharp, though. You know, he had that classic boxing style, heavy hands in his punches. I think he dropped Means a couple times. Maybe didn't go for the kill as much as he should have, but, you know, that's the game. And against a dangerous fighter like Means, I understand not wanting to jump the gun because he can catch you in something. But, yeah, so that was a pretty good one. I picked Means in that fight, so I lost that. Jordan, you got Griffin, so you're up 2-0 on the co-main and main event. It's pretty solid, man.
Yeah, but like I said, the first one, it was kind of, you know, just the main event is just kind of, like I said, I don't really feel satisfied taking that win. I'm going to take it just because it pushes my record up higher, but I'm not going to flaunt it. You know what I'm saying? That the Griffin Means fight was pretty good. It was pretty solid. It seemed like at a certain point, though, it became very paint by the numbers. Like I felt like you were saying, we probably weren't going to see a knockout, probably weren't going to see a finish, but you kind of had an idea that, that, you know, Griffin was probably going to come away handily with the W. So it was a nice one to pad my thing. I think, you know, I was pretty sure Griffin was going to be able to do enough just to get the W there. So, you know, like I said, glad to take it. Yeah. It wasn't as entertaining as I would have liked it to be. I was glad to see Griffin, drop Means a couple of times, but I would have liked to see a little bit more killer instinct, as you would say, from Max Payne Griffin.
Yeah, that's something that's kind of plagued him so far in his career, is that lack of killer instinct. But he has been chinned before trying to go in for the kill, so I understand the reluctancy. So that fight was, you know, we predicted it pretty accurately. The fight that we definitely didn't predict accurately was Josh Fremd versus Trayshawn Gore. What a show out from Gore, honestly. I had so much criticism against him.
Yeah, you owe Mr. Gore an apology.
Yeah, I ate a lot of crow on this one, you know. I stand by what I said. In his career before that, he always showed like a lack of volume and, you know, he wasn't very willing to engage. In this fight, that was definitely not the case. He went right after it early, tagged Fremd with some good shots. And then in the second round, Fremd shoots for a takedown and Gore snapped up his neck like a murder choke. It was crazy.
He didn't really snap it in very much. I was watching it back because I was like, man, how did that get so deep? Fremd was in on a single leg, and then Gore just slowly slipped that that far hand under. And then I think you could see it. Josh Fremd realized how deep it was and started doing that flipping kick off the fence. I thought he was going to get out for a second. But then Gore had him in that point. I'm glad the ref and the commentators were letting him know like he was out, because I don't think the ref saw anything, and Gore was just going to sit there and hold it until someone told him to stop. I thought he was going to pop his head off.
Yeah, I thought so too. It looked like he was going to squeeze his head off like a grape, you know? It was crazy. Then the way his head hits the canvas after, bad job on the ref on that one. But great victory for Gore.
Concussion.
Yeah, man, you don't want to get your head bouncing off the canvas after you get choked out like that. That's not cute, you know. sucks for Fremd, you know. A huge win for Gore, though. If he can show some more activity like that in his upcoming fights, he's definitely going to be a problem in this division in the years to come. Still very young in his career.
Did that get submission of the night? It had to.
Yeah, I think they gave him a performance of the night for that, for sure. Yeah, because that was insane. It was a very violent finish there. Going down the card, we both got this one wrong, but I think really the judges got it wrong. Dustin Jacoby versus Khalil Rountree. I personally felt like Jacoby did enough in the first two rounds to win that fight. I had him 29-28. Khalil showed a great third round and definitely won that round for sure. No dispute for me there. But I thought Jacoby did enough in that first and second. He landed something like 120 strikes to Khalil's like 45. And it's just embarrassing to see that at from a judging standpoint, because Khalil did throw more punches with power in the first round, but none of them landed. You know, Jacoby was slick the whole time and would land three punches for every one punch that Khalil landed. And it's not like Khalil was landing that clean with those punches either. So it was just it was a little frustrating for me. But it is what it is, I suppose.
Man, I had already had this, you know, like I said, I was writing this as I was watching it, and I had already written up. I was like, you know, good showing from Roundtree, you know, kind of saying everything I was going to say anyway, but my tone completely changed when I heard the results. I was like, excuse me?
Yeah, man.
Because, like, you know, I don't know how he won the fight. You know, I do see that he hit a couple power shots early and pretty clean, like, usually in the opening rounds. I don't know what Jacoby's thing was or why he kept on falling for it, but it seemed Roundtree would clip him with, like, one or two, like, pretty decent shots in the round, and then he'd wake up and be like, oh, yeah, I'm actually in a fight. And then he would go about, you know, putting that pressure, that constant pressure, like you said, constantly touching him. That's what won it for me. I felt like if this was a fight that had gone five rounds, or, you know, if you just keep it going, Jacoby ends up knocking him out just off of sheer volume.
Yeah.
But I was extremely surprised to hear that Roundtree got the winner on that one. I was extremely surprised about it. Biggest robbery of the night for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I was watching it on my phone. I wasn't home. And like, I was watching the fight very close. I was like, oh man, I need Jacoby to win here, because it was kind of like an anchor in some of my parlays for Jacoby to win over 1.5. And I saw the first round. I was like, okay, sweet. That's a good round for Jacoby. Second round comes out, even better round for Jacoby. I watched the third round and I was like sweating a little bit. I'm like, oh man, Khalil's starting to land a little bit. But, you know, he still had those two rounds in the bank. And at the end of the fight, they look like the body language is that Jacoby thought he won, you know? And I put down my phone. I was like, that's it. Cool. Let's go. You know, the parlay rolls on. And then I was like, you know, let's go see. I went to the Wikipedia. I was like, let's see what the scorecards were. And they fucking had it split decision for Khalil Roundtree. I was like, I don't know what world this is that he won that fight. But either way, it was a great showing from him. Don't get me wrong. Khalil did very good in the fight, you know, and he showed good cardio to come back in that third round and win. But I can't agree with that decision, you know. And I believe it was the same judge that gave Sean O'Malley the fight against Piotr Jan that scored the fight for Roundtree, or one of them, rather. But,
some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they must have had money on Roundtree by decision. It was probably a crazy prop, you know. But, let's go down to a fight that we actually both agreed upon and won. Was Phil Hawes versus Roman Dolidze. You alluded to it earlier. The injury for Hawes was what really led to the stop of the fight. I felt like, you know, Roman had a great showing. He had a great performance. And he is the one that caused the injury for Hawes with that leg lock. I really am disappointed in Phil Hawes' corner in their choice to keep the fight going. You know, you can always throw in the towel. It's a rule. You can do it at any time. If you see that your guy clearly has a broken or torn ACL or something was wrong in his knee. He couldn't plant the feet. Roman even pointed it to the ref, and the ref was like, I don't care. Like, keep the fight going, you know? So now, you know, they could have thrown in the towel right there, the corner of Phil Hawes, and he would have went and nursed a torn ACL. But instead, now he has to nurse a torn ACL and a concussion because he got knocked out cold against the fence, where he couldn't move anywhere. And, you know, when part of your body's hurt, your conditioning is lowered. And, you know what I mean?
That's Roman being generous too, you know, giving him a KO. I mean, what if he was really, you know, decided it, he could have targeted that ACL that he had already clearly injured and knew that he had injured. He knew he had it. I was watching it and I'm like, all right, man, that's checkmate. You might want to go ahead and tap. Like, cause that's, you know, and like I said, I would like to say, you know, good point. Good on Roman. Because if he really wanted to, he could have just ripped that foot off. It was that deep. He had it that deep. I'm pretty sure he felt the pop, and you felt something. It was like, okay, this is over. And, you know, I get nice on Halls for being a warrior trying to fight, but this is stupid.
Yeah,
that's just stupid. That's stupid. That's stupid. That's taken, like you said, that's taken more money, you know, potential money that you can make, you know, get back to fighting in 3 months or 6 months or however. But now you add something that is going to shorten your, you know, your career span, you know, with the concussion on top of the ACL. You know, it's just very irresponsible from a lot of people involved. You know, I feel like the ref probably should have said something, stopped it. The doctor should have like had something to say. Mm-hmm. The coroner should have said something. You know, Phil Hall should have had, you know, the, and I get it being in a competitive atmosphere and everything, but yeah, you don't have a title in the line, man. Just,
yeah.
No one's going to look at you in that situation and be like, oh, you had an ACL. You should have kept on fighting. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
We got the point. You know, I think that was your first point on the board?
I got the Lima as well.
Oh, yeah.
So those are my two dubs that weekend. I mean, I feel like I probably could have gone 3-3 if Jacoby had won. But, you know, even still, that's not a stellar record. You know, I would have just broke even. But I think we'll do better on this Rodriguez versus Lemos card. But yeah, man, I thought, you know, Roman had a great performance. You know, he went for that leg lock. Phil Hawes had no, it didn't look like he gave a shit about the leg lock. You know, he just kind of like posted up and let him tear his knee apart. And he said in the post-fight interview, Dillard say that he felt the knee pop and that's why he let go, because he knows how painful that is. And he didn't want to like really like, you know, he's a competitor. He's not a killer. So he had to get the knockout and it is what it is. You pick the right thing. I picked the right thing, but it just feels very disappointing to me for Phil Hall's corner to let him continue to fight while you know that his ACL is torn. And, you know, people might say like, oh, what about Cater's corner as well? But that wasn't very decisive yet. You know, they were in the corner like, how's your knee? They asked him. And he said, I don't know. So it wasn't like he was like, well, I'm fucked, you know, because I think they would.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a completely different, you know, situation. Like,
yeah.
You know, Cater went for, you know, you said he went for that flying knee and everything and just landed wrong. Sometimes that happens and you land wrong and you're like, oh, you just need a moment to like shake it off or, you know, it might. But like with a leg lock, you know, whenever I roll around with my son or roll around with, you know, kids that I'm teaching or anything, you know, I'm very, you know, on certain things, you know, have the self-respect to be able to tap whenever it's like, you know, it's checkmate.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I tell them, especially with leg locks, ankle locks, anything like that, rotator cuffs, you know, I'm like, if you get caught and you get a tap, man, just tap.
Because you're going to
eventually, you know, if you get caught in a situation that could cripple you for life. Like I said, if Roman really wanted to, and Halls wasn't going to tap, he could have literally made it to where his fighting career is over.
Yeah.
So it's just a dumb thing. I mean, I get what he's doing. I get the, you know, he's the battle,
a warrior and
trying
all
to
that.
Go out. Yeah. Be a warrior and everything. But you know, sometimes you just get beat, man. Sometimes it's checkmate. There's nothing wrong with resigning in a situation that is going to prevent, you know, protect your long-term health and career.
Yeah, I agree completely. Just to gloss over that first fight, Rogério de Lima looked amazing. Did everything I thought he would. The wrestling was a huge factor. Pretty much just barreled over Arlovsky and rocked him on the feet and then took him down and finished him there. So, you know, he did exactly what he was supposed to do against the aging vet and Arlovsky. It sucks to see him lose. He was on a 4-fight winning streak. But you look at those guys that he would beat and they're really low level stuff for the UFC. You know, Jake Collier, Chase Sherman, Jared Vanderaa. These are some of the worst fighters in the UFC. So Arlovsky was able to get away against these sloppy heavyweights, like I said, but, you know, against somebody that's actually athletic and powerful and has a well-rounded game like the Lima, you can't really pull those same kind of veteran tricks, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I got a point here, but I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I still, no matter what, I would have still picked de Lima to win, but I really didn't realize all the history going around what Andre was chasing. And I like Arlovsky, man. Been around for a while, so I would love to see him, like, get another win or two to maybe push him past, you know, to that thing. But, you know, I'm a sucker for sentimentality and emotional stuff. But yeah, you can tell that it's the age is really catching up to him.
Yeah,
And it's, I think they might be trying to, you know, try to give him that history for all of his years of service in the UFC, which is quite extensive. So, you know, maybe that's what they're trying to do so he can retire off with history. But I can't see him doing this for too much longer. And, you know, I mean, how many fighters do you see, you know, are searching for a win or two over like a 5-year period and it, you know, come up dry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely, I think he's just going to fight until he can't fight anymore, honestly. And he could probably still beat some of these shitty heavyweights like we talked about. But yeah, you got to start looking down the barrel of retirement, you know. I mean, we say that, but he was on a 4-fight win streak. It's just he just has to pick the right fights. And if he leaves the UFC, they're going to feed him to the dogs, of course. So I would stick around if he can. You know, I'm sure the UFC has no problem keeping him around, considering everything he's done for the promotion over the last damn near 20 years, you know. So, a little bit sad of an ending there, but expected. Great performance from De Lima, not to take anything away from him. You know, another quick first round finish for him and against a big vet. Like, you know, he had that one against Rothwell and now against Arlovsky. So the guy's starting to build some momentum in this division for sure. But yeah, let's take a little break and we'll come back and look at Rodriguez versus Lemos. We'll break down a couple of fights from that card. Just some quick ones because there's really not that much noteworthy stuff to go over. We'll be right back though. All right, so we're going to start breaking down a few fights from the Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Lemos fight card. The first one we're going to go over is Grant Dawson versus Mark Madsen. This is a super intriguing fight against two stellar grapplers at 155. Madsen is an Olympic silver medalist in wrestling for the country Denmark, and his wrestling pedigree has pretty much won him every fight he's had so far in the UFC. You know, everything you expect from a championship level wrestler like that. He's got very explosive takedowns. He can maintain top control for as long as he needs to against people he's fought so far. But he's facing a very tough and well-rounded Grant Dawson, who's made his money in the UFC by grappling as well. So this guy's no slouch on the ground at all. The big outlier in this fight for me is the cardio for both guys. Grant has used his cardio as a tool over and over to drown dudes out. And he often gets third round finishes in the UFC. He's gotten a few so far. Against Madsen, that's going to be a huge tool because Madsen typically wins the first two rounds and then will drop the third round and win 29-28 if he wins the decision. And I don't know if that's going to be such a great idea against somebody that pushes the pace like Grant Dawson. I think Dawson's going to be able to, you know, work the volume, work the pace, work the pressure, and really wear down on that gas tank of Madsen. Madsen's faded in the third round of several fights, like I said, so I'm going to take Grant by third round finish. I think he's going to get it done. Madsen hasn't been finished yet. I don't even know if he's lost yet, honestly, but he had a pretty close couple fights with guys like, I think, Clay Guida he fought, and it was pretty close, and it was like, you shouldn't really be having that kind of a close fight with Clay Guida, you know? Yeah. So yeah, he had a super close fight with Clay Guida against Vince Pichel. Again, also like lost the third round, clearly. The dude is one of the best fighters in the world for 10 minutes. And then in that last five minutes, he tends to fade for sure. So I think in my eyes, this fight might look a lot like Bilal Muhammad versus Sean Brady that we saw at UFC 280, where if the one guy can't get a takedown, he'll end up just getting tired and getting outstruck until he gets knocked out or finished somehow. So I'm going to take Dawson by finish. I think it's probably going to be in the third round, but I think he does get it done.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that one. I think this is going to be I could see it going to decision. I don't know about a finish. I would say if he does finish him, what do you think? You think he can get a submission in the third round?
I think so. I mean, Dawson's done it before, you know, he's got really good jiu-jitsu and solid wrestling of his own, right?
Well, I mean, it says that he's 67% of his wins come by submission. So I'm going to take Dawson in the third by submission. I think he's going to get it done. I think the wrestler will, you know, like you said, I think he's going to tire himself out and get into the third. And I think he's going to try to rely on his wrestling to try to pull him out of it. And you'll see Dawson snap up a submission.
Yeah, man. Dawson's one of those guys that if he smells blood, he's going to go for the kill. And Madsen will leave blood in the water sometimes, you know. The guy, I mean, he's won every fight, you know, but he doesn't look the most dominant in that third round, like we said. And against somebody that can push that pressure and has the cardio to outlast, I think he's not going to show up too well against Grant Dawson. I got Dawson in this one for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to take Dawson moneyline, but you know, if someone wants to try to make a little extra money, I would say Dawson by finish, or if you want to go super specific, Dawson by third round submission.
Yeah, I like those. I like those picks. I'm probably going to take Dawson by third round, but you know, the moneyline pick is the obvious one. In case he does get that decision victory. But yeah, so we'll go down to the co-main event. We got Neil Magny versus Daniel Rodriguez. This is another super interesting matchup. Striker versus well-rounded fighter. Magny's been there and done that at 170. He's a consummate professional. I don't think he's ever missed weight that I can remember. Has a smothering grappling game and rangy attacks on the feet. Both these guys are willing to go to decision in order to avoid getting caught with something. They're both very comfortable over three rounds. Daniel is more of a boxer with good combinations. And when he lets them go, he has decent pop in his hands as well. But it definitely makes his bread with his, you know, with his hands. He doesn't really throw a lot of kicks or anything like that. And he's been controlled in the wrestling before. That may be a path to victory for the wily vet in Neil Magny. On the other hand, Magny's been stopped by skilled strikers before, like guys like Ponzinibbio and Lorenz Larkin. But a big tool for those guys was using their kicks to set up their power punches. For Larkin, it was the front kick to the body. For Ponzinibbio, it was the power leg kick. And it's not really a luxury that Rodriguez has been able to afford in the past. He typically makes his bread by using his hands. Maybe he'll throw a couple leg kicks here and there, but it's going to be the extent of his kicking game. He's really not going to threaten you too much with those kicks. He's really more of a set them up with his hands kind of guy. And guys like Ponzi and Larkin were able to find that success because they constantly had him guessing where the next strike was coming from. So I don't know if D-Rod's going to be able to implement that same game plan. I mean, he definitely has the power and boxing prowess to knock out Neil Magny. And Magny got hurt in his last fight against Max Griffin. But, you know, the rest of that fight was very dominant for Magny. And if you have any holes in your wrestling or your cardio, Magny's going to exploit that and likely win by decision. So, I mean, I think Magny's going to be able to get it done. I just think he's too scrappy. I can see him getting chinned by Rodriguez, but it's a super close matchup. I'm probably going to take the over either way or the fight to go the distance. But just to get some juice on the money, I'm going to put Magny by decision. I think he's going to be able to win enough wrestling exchanges and kill enough clock in a few rounds that he'll be able to win a clear-cut decision. On the feet, I think D-Rod will pose some problems, but he hasn't faced somebody with the length and reach as Magny. Magny's huge for the weight class, so that might be a problem for him to get his hands to, you know, reach the target. The reach advantage is always a big factor in these fights. The height even more so when you compound it with a reach advantage. So something that I heard Jack Slack do on his podcast that made a lot of sense to me to help you visualize, putting out the reach versus a taller fighter. If you put your arm out like fully extended and touch the wall, like right in front of you at shoulder level, then put your arm up like 6 inches, you're not going to be touching the wall anymore. So you have to reach up and come past a reach advantage. It's very tough to land punches like that. So I could see Magny staying on the outside and then being all the way on the inside to get some wrestling exchanges and win this fight over the course of three rounds. How do you see this one playing out, Jordan?
That's actually exactly how I see it playing out. Like, I was just looking at the, you know, where you're going. I saw the, you know, the 6'3 to 6'1, 80 to 74 reach, 45 to 41. I think that, and I said, I think you're right, you know, especially with the fact that these guys, you know, tend to like to go to the decision. I can absolutely see Neil Magny keeping him on the outside and maybe just frustrating with them, especially like you said, if D-Rod can't get those combinations going or can't seem to find his range, which is going to be extremely hard for him against Neil Magny.
Hmm.
I feel like this is one that the odds have it as pretty much a coin flip. For me, I got to say Neil Magny is going to win this by a pretty easy decision, maybe a split decision, but I don't think it'll be anything that, you know, anybody will feel upset about. So I'm going to have to go to Neil Magny winning by decision.
Yeah, I could see this fight ending up very close. Rodriguez had a very close fight in his last fight, and so did Magny against Li Jiang Liang and Max Griffin, respectively. So I could see this fight ending in split decision. That might be a good prop to bet on. Those are usually like plus 600. So you could bet $5 on that and win like 35. But I'm ultimately going to be taking Magny by decision. I would be surprised to see the odds come out that they're not around like plus 300 for Magny by decision. So you can get some decent juice on that one. But let's go down to this main event. It's a banger of a matchup at women's strawweight, everybody's favorite women's division. Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Lemos. Super exciting top five matchup here. Rodriguez is a great striker with pop in her punches, but largely makes her statement with her steadfast boxing combinations and cascading volume. She builds as the fight goes on and has shown in multiple fights now to be a five-round fighter. She always turns it up in the third, fourth, and fifth. She's very exciting to watch. The only boring fights she's been in have been ones where she's been grappled to death, like against Carla Esparza. So she's shown some porous deep takedown defense. At 35, that's probably not going to change anytime soon. But she's facing a killer here in Amanda Lemos, a bona fide finisher who's knocked out a few girls cold at this weight class, which is pretty rare to see. She ran into a pretty tough test against Jessica Andrade, who's, you know, super slick, and another girl that knocks girls out. She was doing very well in that fight, but then our judge snapped up like a fucking James Bond choke where it was like a standing arm triangle. It was crazy. And, you know, Andrade is a perennial contender in two weight classes, so really no shame in that loss. Lemos came back and bounced back in her last fight against Michelle Waterson. I was actually there at that fight. It was a pretty interesting fight, but kind of boring on the first round. Second round, Michelle goes for a takedown and Lemos snaps her up in a guillotine. So Lemos has shown that she can knock girls out. She hits really hard. She throws every shot with ill intention, but she also has pretty slick grappling and has used her wrestling to her advantage in her fights before against Angela Hill. Against Angela Hill and against Michelle, she was able to use that grappling to win rounds and secure a victory. Yeah, she usually will use that wrestling against solid strikers. But the big flaw in her game plan is her cardio. She slowed down in that fight against Hill that I mentioned, and Hill has a very similar striking style as Rodriguez. They're both very volume heavy and will make you pay for making mistakes. So I think that might be a huge factor in this fight. In my eyes, if Lemos can't get Rodriguez out of there early, which, you know, is something that nobody's been able to do so far, I think it's going to be Rodriguez all day. I think she has way cleaner boxing technique. She can box the ears off Lemos with a couple close rounds in the first couple rounds, but I think she'll probably win the fight by finish, honestly, in the fourth or fifth. If not, she'll get a clean-cut decision. So I'm going to take Rodriguez over 1.5. I could see this fight going the distance, but we haven't seen Lemos in five rounds, we haven't seen her cardio over five rounds, and that might have a huge drop-off after the third, as we saw in the Hill fight where she really struggled in that third round. And if anybody could take her there, it's got to be Rodriguez. She's super tough and, like we said, has great striking and boxing combinations. So I'm going to take Rodriguez in this fight. She's a minus 210 favorite, so taking her over 1.5, you'll probably get her at, like, you know, plus 100 or something like that. So that should be pretty good. That's what I'm thinking about this fight. What are you thinking, Jordan?
I'm going to probably have to agree with you on that one. Did you catch the Rodriguez Yan fight? How was she able to handle Yan's pressure on the feet?
She did very well in that fight, man. She was handling the pressure. She stayed in her face with the boxing combinations. She was also able to wrestle Yan in that fight. So, I mean, she has that tool in her back pocket, but she really loves to strike instead. I think it's really just the poorest wrestling defense of Yan. That fight was pretty close, though. But yeah, Rodriguez, I thought, won clearly.
Yeah, I mean, I like Lemos, and I can, you know, I've actually seen her compete quite a bit. I do like her, but I just don't see her getting Rodriguez out of there. Like you said, maybe she's able to catch her and put her lights out early in the first or second, but I think Rodriguez is going to play a smart game plan and get up comfortably on the cards. And then, like you said, possibly put her out in the championship rounds. But you know, maybe Lemos is strong in the fifth. We'll see. I'm gonna have to, like I said, in the essence of trying to build up my record, I'm gonna have to go with Rodriguez. I think it's a smart pick. I would say if I'm going to have to pick an upset, an upset alert on this one, I would say Lemos is the one to cause it, maybe a quick knockout in the first or second. I wouldn't be surprised, but I would say that if I got to, put my smart money, I'm going to go with Rodriguez to, I'm going to say my Rodriguez win. Like I said, if you want to put a little extra money and get specific on it, I'm going to say that she wins by KO in the fourth.
I like that pick. Lemos.
Well, yeah, it's your pick.
Yeah, true. Yeah, fair enough. But, Lemos is a very similar fighting style to Davison Figueiredo, the flyweight champ. She stands tall, hits hard, has a nasty guillotine if people try to shoot on her. But, I questioned Figueiredo's cardio as well. And he really proved it in those Moreno fights by pulling out the fifth round in a couple of them and just having overall success in those latter rounds. So, if Lemos can, surprise me like that, that the power style works over five rounds, I'd love to see that because I think she might be a better suited threat to the title against somebody like Carla or Weili. But I love Rodriguez's fight style. Both these girls are 35 years old, so, they probably don't have that much time left in the division. So I'd like to see the winner of this fight get the title shot, or at least, be right there for it. Great things to come from this fight card. A lot of no-name fighters on the undercard and main card, but a couple of good ones, as we pointed out, recognizable names in Magny and Rodriguez. But yeah, man, I think it's going to be a good one nonetheless. Sometimes... A lot of times, these cards that you underestimate turn out to be bangers and have a lot of finishes. So I'm excited to see it nonetheless. We'll see how it plays out, though,
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it. And like you said, stars are made, all the time. Stars are made in the dark. So this, this might lead to a prospect watch for us. You never know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we'll see how it plays out,
I didn't mean to cut you off, man. Speaking of just like, I've been noticing that a lot of the discrepancy in age for a lot of these, a lot of the women's divisions, you'll see a lot of these older ones up at 35 and then there's a huge gap. And then you have all these young girls coming up. I think the women's division in the next like 5, 10, 15 years is going to explode.
Yeah, definitely. Specifically women's strawweight, I think. There's just so much talent in that weight class. You look at the top five, it's stacked, Weili Zhang, Carla Esparza, Rose Namajunas. You got Jessica Andrade waiting in the wings. These two ladies, Rodriguez and Lemos, they're both killers in their own right. So there's a Yan Xiaonan, Mackenzie Dern. There's so many great fighters in this weight class. I'm really excited to see how this division shakes out over the next couple of years, especially with that Weili Carla fight coming up. I'm probably gonna have, I think everybody's gonna take Weili in that fight, but we'll see how it happens,
stuff happens all the time. We'll get to that fight card when we get there.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely gonna be coming with some fight look back soon, maybe some retrospective pieces on a couple of careers that went under the radar. You guys can check out their careers on Fight Pass or ESPN Plus if you have it. But yeah, more things to come from the TKO podcast. We're going to keep the TKO Nation fed and well, keep them fat. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's been a pleasure. Let's hope that we bounce back a little bit on our betting slip for this one. Thanks for listening, y'all. Stay tuned.
Yeah, guys, put your picks in the comments below and let us know how you stack up against us. See if you beat the TKO Nation.
Yeah, it wouldn't be hard. Last week was pretty rough.
Hey, speak for yourself. I'm over 500.
That's true. That's true.
It happens. This is how we get better, though. This is how you get better. You get better by discussing it,
Yeah, man. I'll come back. I got faith in my game. But yeah, man, it's been a pleasure talking, brother. You guys stay tuned for the next episode. We're coming with a lot more soon. Take it easy.